With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Brazil asking the World Trade Organization for consultations over new U.S. tariffs. That's 10% on all Brazilian products and an additional 40% on certain goods circulated to WTO members on August the 11th. Now, the officials say the measures violate U.S. commitments under GATT, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, as well as the WTO's dispute rules by imposing penalties without first pursuing settlement procedures. Now, the case recalls Brazil's 2003 WTO challenge against U.S. cotton subsidies. It was a landmark ruling that ultimately reformed American export credit programs, the cotton program, and secured a $300 million payment to Brazil's cotton sector. That dispute demonstrated the effectiveness of using WTO channels to protect ag trade interest. But this time, Brazil's farm exports, including soybeans, beef, sugar, and cotton, face increased cost in a key market. Government has opted against immediate retaliation, instead focusing on legal remedies and domestic support to buffer exporters. Ag leaders say the stakes are high, but view the WTO process as the best path to resolve tensions and safeguard market access for rural producers. A significant difference is WTO dispute resolution process is not functioning right now, as the U.S. has blocked for the past 5 years any new members to that panel. Well, two of the world's largest basic apparel makers, Gildan Activewear and Hanes Brands, agreeing to merge in a deal valued at $4.4 billion. Combination will create a global leader in activewear and innerwear, with a vertically integrated manufacturing network capable of producing massive volumes of cotton-based clothing. Now, for U.S. cotton growers, the merger could offer upside. Both companies source significant amounts of cotton for T-shirts, underwear, socks, and fleece products, with Gildan low-cost vertically integrated mills and Hanes Brands established retail presence. Combined firm expected to increase production efficiency, expand distribution, potentially raise demand for U.S.-grown fiber. Industry analysts note that cost synergies projected at $200 million annually within 3 years could make U.S. cotton more competitive in global supply chains, especially for higher quality fiber used in premium innerwear. USDA's 2025 state-level cropland value report shows farmland values continue to rise, though at a slower pace than in recent years. Nationally, average cropland values increased 4.7%, with Utah, Michigan, and Tennessee leading the way. According to David Widmar with Agricultural Economic Insights, all reporting states posted year-over-year gains. Looking over the longer term, values have climbed steadily since 2018. After several years of declines, since that low point, Kansas leads the nation with a 67% increase, followed by 55% in Nebraska, 52% from Oklahoma. Eastern Corn Belt states like Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, gaining more than 50%, while Indiana and Illinois posted modest growth of about 33%. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
Difficulty finding adequate labor is a common challenge for farmers across the U.S. Philip Hunter, a wholesale tree grower from Alabama, says hired help is vital to his business's success.
There's very little automation in the nursery business, so we have to have labor to do almost everything we do. We grow landscape trees, so planting, pruning, staking. We have equipment to run that we need when we're harvesting, when we're shipping. We'll have multiple crews working on many different things at one time.
Hunter's Nursery uses the H-2A guest worker program to find labor. While the program has no doubt been helpful, he says the system still needs some updates.
It's a good program, but it's been around 40 years, and it needs to be updated. It needs to be streamlined, particularly the adverse effect wage rate, which we must pay. It has gone up in Alabama 34% since 2023.
Hunter says farmers can and should get involved in advocating for changes to the labor program.
We've been advocating three different approaches: executive action through the Trump administration, legislative action through our congressman, and then action through the agencies like Department of Labor, Department of Homeland Security, USDA. Get involved there.
Linda Pryor, an apple grower from Western North Carolina, said they simply can't run their farm without enough labor.
Produce as a whole is very labor intensive and time sensitive. For the apples that we're growing, we're producing about 6.5 million pounds of apples annually. All apples are picked by hand, as is a lot of produce. And so there's not a machine to take the place of that employee that we need to be able to help us get that job done.
One of the most challenging aspects finding labor is the H-2A visa program, which Pryor said can be improved through simplification.
For example, consolidating to one agency being the overseeing agency for it, a centralized digital system that farmers like myself felt comfortable navigating on their own so that we didn't have that added expense of having to use a farm labor contractor. I think that multiple agencies being involved caused some of the delays that happened.
She said farmers have to get involved in advocating. Pryor says the days of farmers and ranchers keeping to themselves on their operations is over.
Do what you can, whatever that is. And that's going to mean different things for different people. If it means that you can make phone calls when you're driving or send emails, that's great. If you can make the time to attend meetings. If not, just supporting others that do have the opportunity to speak up. As farmers, we know what the problems are, and we need the lawmakers to hear from us.
Chad Smith, Washington.
So from H-2A to USDA's August Crop Production Reports, Chief Economist Seth Meyer.
I think the other acreage surprise was the loss of about 843,000 acres of cotton, a pretty sizable change in cotton area, giving us change in cotton production well below trade expectations, probably close to 1 million bales below the range of trade expectations going into the report. So cotton markets tightening up, probably good as a global level. Our expectations for overall cotton consumption year over year is flat. When we look in a little bit more detail on the balance sheets, we did get some survey-based wheat information as well, too. Not a large effect in terms of overall plantings and harvested area, but we'll note that we raised the export forecast 25 million bushels because of better than anticipated exports of HRW. Another interesting acreage change as well, found back about 60,000 acres of rice, not in Arkansas where we've seen significant prevent plant, but in places like Mississippi and Missouri, seeing a little bit of a higher acreage total than previously anticipated.
It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
75% of what our producers are those animals that are being produced in the United States, 75% of that stays here in the U.S. for the domestic consumption.
Maria Ziba, Vice President, Government Affairs, National Pork Producers Council.
We're only exporting about 25% of our production. So having a strong domestic consumption is really important. And to that effect, the checkoff, the National Pork Board, just launched a new campaign, and we're excited to see the numbers on that and all the great things that they're doing on the non-lobbying side and on the checkoff side. But certainly for us at MPPC, we've got to do everything possible to make sure that regulations in the United States are at a place, regulations or laws are at a place where our producers can be competitive in the United States, but also globally. So that's what our team here at MPPC does, is ensuring the livelihood of our pork producers to make sure that there's a future for the next generation, not only for our farmers, but for the next generation of farmers coming up.
Which underscores the importance of domestic demand. Chandler Gould is CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers, says when it comes to domestic demand, there's MAHA.
The most important thing about MAHA, Tony, that we need to all agree upon is, could our food system be better? Well, absolutely. And could our agriculture production systems be better? Yes, on that as well. There's always room for improvement. And so I just want to be very clear that the wheat growers don't think that we're doing everything perfect. But our concerns are some of the what I would literally call allegations, and then also recommendations from the first MAHA report as we prepare for this second one to come out here in the month of August, simply were not based on sound science. And so if you're going to make recommendations to the changes to our food systems or our agricultural production systems, it needs to be backed with peer-reviewed sound science. And if it is, I can guarantee you growers will look at it and will figure out how to adopt it. But when it's more on theories of individuals that have no science behind it, not only is it impractical, but probably even impossible for the wheat grower to do, we're simply asking, when you are putting these things into a government document that is being critical of our food system and our agricultural production system, and you have to think about the audience is probably now eight generations removed from their food supply, you're putting basically false information out there that is scaring the consumer in regards to the safety of our production systems. And we know we have one of the most safe agriculture food production systems in the world that is still at the lowest cost to its consumers. So we're really banging on one point. Please make sure your recommendations or criticisms are based on sound science, and that will solve a lot of the concern and uncertainty that we're seeing in the agriculture industry in regards to the Make America Healthy Again reports that continue to come out of the Trump administration.
And you're listening to Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We are the policy arm of, that represents the 60,000 U.S. pork producers.
Maria Ziba is Vice President of Government Affairs, National Pork Producers Council.
I'm located here in Washington, D.C., so is most of my team. And we do all the lobbying for the industry on Capitol Hill with embassies, with the administration. And of course, we have our headquarters in Des Moines, Iowa.
And when it comes to trade, Mexico is vital.
For Mexico, it's really positive. We are seeing a 90-day extension on the trade negotiations with Mexico. Both President Trump and President Sheinbaum from Mexico had a really good conversation. So what they've decided to do is instead of imposing tariffs here on August 1st, we are going to be moving that down to 90 days from now. And hopefully we can get a further relief in the future. So ultimately for our industry, it's positive to see that the products coming in are not going to be facing those tariffs and that the Mexicans are not retaliating against us. That's the other important word here is that so far we've not seen retaliation from the Mexican government on U.S. pork and pork products. And that's really important. And it's different than what we had seen in 2017-2018 when Mexico had applied a 20% tariff on U.S. pork products. So far we've been working really closely with our counterparts in Mexico and the Mexican government to assuage concerns, but mostly to make sure that we can continue to have product flowing into Mexico.
And when it comes to China?
When it comes to China, we have a pretty robust trade. Last year in 2024, we exported $1.2 billion. We are slightly down this year, somewhat because of those tariffs. The rest of the world is paying a 12% tariff for pork products. We are at 57%. We just got really good news here that our tariffs are going to remain at 57% into China. There was an action by the Chinese to not provide exclusions for the Section 301 tariffs. Those are the intellectual property tariffs from back in the day in 2018. So if they weren't providing those extensions, we would have faced tariffs upwards of 87%. So at this point in time, we're in a really good spot with China in that the tariffs have remained at 57%. Unfortunately, it's still more significantly higher than our competitors. But we definitely need to move a lot of those products that we just don't have another avenue for. For example, those edible offals like livers and other wonderful products and byproducts of the U.S. pig that unfortunately aren't as consumed in the U.S.
And this is Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
So first of all, what to expect from your butcher steer that you finished out?
Dr. Mark Johnson, Oklahoma State University beef breeding specialist.
Of the four major wholesale cuts that come from a beef carcass, the round loin ribbon chuck, the chuck or shoulder region is going to be a little over 25%. We're typically going to get a lot of roast and stew meat from that particular cut. The round is usually around 22 to 24% of that carcass. And the rib and loin collectively are the back meats and really have a lot of interest because that's where our really great steaks come from. T-bones, Casey strips, ribeye steaks, things like that. But the rib and loin collectively, on average, are a little under 27% of the carcass. Now, the rest of what we take home is going to be things like brisket, short plate, the flank, the shanks. They're all small percentages of the carcass, as you can see from the diagram. So that gives you a rough feel for the approximate percentages that you're going to take home of each thing. Second question, and we had a lot of varieties of this question, is we all want more steaks. Steaks are those premium cuts that come from a beef carcass, those muscles in the back that are really low in connective tissue, and really what drive the value of a beef carcass based on the amount of marbling that's in there. And if we are selling a butcher beef or a fed animal, often the big driver of the value of that carcass. In reality, we know the rib and loin are going to be about 26.8% of the weight or the hot carcass weight, but how many actual cuts of steak are we going to get? Now, this becomes interesting. Typically, we say probably around 24 ribeye steaks, around 24 T-bones or strip loins. But this really starts to vary. It depends on how we want the carcass cut up. A T-bone steak, for example, could be separated out into a strip loin as well as a fillet. It also depends a great deal on how thick we want our steaks cooked. Most consumers prefer a steak that is between 3/4 inch to 1.5 inches thick. Obviously, with that 26.8% of our carcass that comes from the rib and loin, the thickness of those steaks is going to have a dramatic impact on how many steaks we actually take home. So give consideration to that. Third big question that we had is how much fat to leave on the carcass. The first thing I would say, fat is a good thing with regard to taste. The perception of tenderness, the juiciness and flavor that we get from cuts of beef, fat is going to be a driver of that. It's going to contribute to that. If we leave more fat on the carcass, it's actually going to lead to less evaporative loss through the aging process. If we leave more fat on the carcass, it's going to increase the expected yield and the amount of take-home product that we get. But trimming off more fat, while it might take away from the amount of yield that we get from the carcass, is also going to mean that's less external cover we have to trim off at home. With regard to this topic, I always say go for an optimum. If I'm having ground beef made, I like an 80-20 mix. If I think about a ground beef patty, something I'm going to cook on the grill, once that is ground up, that 20% fat that is actually in that burger breaks down just like marbling does in a steak and leads to a very satisfying eating experience. I encourage you, if you're having a steer or heifer carcass processed, talk to your meat packer, talk about the cutting specs, exchange some information and have a dialogue. You're going to find your packers want you to be satisfied with what you take home. Perhaps even after they've looked at that carcass and have a feel for it, they're going to be able to offer some information that's going to help guide you through the cutting specs that you give them, which often I believe will lead to a more satisfying eating experience once you get home.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
In 2024, Brazilian agriculture exports totaled $164 billion. China was the top buyer, accounting for 30% of that total, followed by the European Union with 14% and the United States with 7%.
University of Illinois ag economist Joanna Calusi looking at Brazilian agriculture and tariffs.
Even before these new tariffs, Brazil had been reinforcing its trade with the BRICS nations, Russia, India, China, and South America, alongside Brazil itself. Over the past 15 years, China has become Brazil's largest agricultural trading partner. While the U.S. duties were relaxed by hundreds of exemptions announced in July, including Brazilian orange juice, nuts, and fertilizers, they still cover a wide range of goods. These exemptions represent about 42% of Brazil's exports to the U.S. and apply to products like cars, civilian aircraft, certain metals, and some types of wood. However, other agricultural products remain fully subject to the 50% tariffs, such as coffee, beefy, tropical fruits like mango and papaya, seafood, and cocoa. For products with a strong U.S. market presence, the impact could be even more significant. Brazilian coffee makes up 17% of export value to the U.S., beef 10%, tobacco 9%, cocoa 13%, and seafood 56%. Let's take coffee as one example. Brazil is the world's largest coffee exporter and a key supplier to the U.S., accounting for 34% of America's total coffee consumption. The U.S., in turn, is the largest coffee consumer in the world, importing 99% of its consumption. The coffee industry here supports about 2 million jobs and generates over $300 billion for the economy. Exporters and importers warn that new tariffs could push up consumer prices and add pressure to inflation. In response, Brazil has started looking for other destinations for coffee shipments that would normally go to the United States, a challenge to the specification and phytosanitary standards in many other markets. One growing alternative is China. On July 30, China approved around 180 new Brazilian coffee companies to export there, a move likely to boost shipments between the two BRIC members. The beef sector faces its own challenges. Brazil is the third largest supplier of beef to the U.S. after Australia and Canada. The U.S., meanwhile, is Brazil's second largest beef export market, taking about 8% of total shipments in 2024, second only to China's 46%. With the 50% tariffs in place, Brazilian meat packers expect to lose at least $1 billion this year. Industry leaders say that no other market can easily replace the United States, given its high demand and the premium prices paid. Meanwhile, the United States could source more beef from Argentina or Australia, for example, but that could drive up prices for some products, like ground beef, adding even more to inflation. And this shift would not happen overnight, since global beef production is not increased fast enough.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.